Welcome to a Burning Fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Please listen as I read to you three rather extended passages from the book of Deuteronomy. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and thou shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thy hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes. And thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house, and on thy gates. And when thy son asketh thee in time to come, what mean the testimonies and the statutes and the judgments which the Lord our God hath commanded you? Then thou shalt say unto thy son, We were Pharaoh's bondmen in Egypt, and the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. And the Lord showed signs and wonders, great and sore, upon Egypt, upon Pharaoh, and upon all his household before your eyes. And he brought us out from thence, that he might bring us in and give us the land which he sware to our fathers. And the Lord commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God, for our good always, that he might preserve us alive, as it is this day. And it shall be our righteousness, if we observe to do all these commandments before the Lord our God, as he hath commanded us. If a man have a stubborn and rebellious son, which will not obey the voice of his father and the voice of his mother, and that when they have chastened him will not hearken unto them, then shall the father and his mother lay hold on him, and bring him out unto the elders of his city, and unto the gate of his place, and they shall say unto the elders of the city, This our son is stubborn and rebellious, and he will not obey our voice, for he is a glutton and a drunkard. And all the men of his city shall stone him with stones that he die. So shalt thou put evil away from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. Now these verses, of course, are from the Mosaic Law, but they introduce our theme. Those laws were firm, they were hard, insisting upon obedience from children and the exercise of parental government in the home. Is there not a need for people today to think on the matter of parental government? Seeing the veritable rash of wayward children, disturbed homes, divorce, the void of spiritual guidance, the breakdown of respect for authority? In the first chapters of 1 Samuel, we see two kinds of parental government and the results of each one. One is that of Eli, the other is that of Hannah. One proved to be a failure, the other produced blessed results. It was the obligation of Jewish parents to train their children in the knowledge and respect of God. Failure in this effort was one of the most serious crimes, and the punishment for failure was of the greatest magnitude. Now, as then, the family is the fountain of all national life. The hope of the nation is in the families, where the young are trained, hopefully to be pure and holy and pious, and to live a righteous way of life. It was incumbent upon all parents to be attentive to this duty, especially those of leadership. And this obligation rests upon every father and mother today, to see that their children are brought up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Failure does not always mean the death of the child, of course, as under the law of Moses, but it always means sorrow and grief and worry and punishment, either here or in the hereafter. And the family is still the fountain of national life. It is still a sin against society, the child, and God, not to train up the child in the way that he should go, Proverbs 22 and verse 6. And while we're taught this duty, not all obey God in doing it. Look at Eli. Generally, he was a good man and faithful in his official priestly duties, but he was radically defective in the government of his family. His children grew up unrestrained, self-willed, self-indulgent, even irreverent for things holy and divine. They were never guided in the proper values. And Eli's sons were priests, having inherited the duty. But they did not care for the people. They had little religious interest, They use their position for personal gain and to satisfy their passions, even to commit adultery, to take unfair portions of food for themselves. And they brought disgrace and public contempt on their office and upon their father as well as themselves. Well, we're not left to wonder what contributed to their misconduct. Eli was responsible. Children sometimes resist the influence of the best of homes, but that's not the rule. Trained properly, they will likely be proper. When children are lawless and corrupt and irreligious, even rejecting the Christ, we can be fairly certain that there was sinful neglect in their spiritual training. Now, there are exceptions, but that is the rule. Training of children consists of more than sending them to Bible study once a week. It demands living before them day by day an exemplary life. Children learn by words, but they also learn by deeds. During the formative years, many parents have been just too busy with lesser matters to attend to the spiritual training that's necessary for their children. Somehow they seem to think that they can neglect the Word of God, ignore the church, put the world first in their life, and still their children will grow up loving God and desiring to live a life that will take them to heaven. Eli was at fault for not checking the wickedness of his sons. He had the authority to act, but he did not act. For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth, because his sons made themselves vile, and he restrained them not. That was God's explanation to young Samuel as to why Eli and his sons were not favorable before God. Too many parents ignore the misdeeds of their small children, and the children do not learn to abide by parental directions, and therefore they fail to restrain themselves later. Too many parents run to the defense of their children, regardless of what the child does, right or wrong. Now, while we must stand by them even when they are wrong, we must stand so that they will know that they are wrong, and they'll have the opportunity to make correction. But too many parents condone the misbehavior of their offsprings. The result was a total failure for Eli and his sons, even suffering upon the priesthood and all of Israel. And God showed his displeasure with Eli by the judgments placed against him and his family. But look at Hannah, the mother of Samuel. When she was childless, she prayed that God would give her a child for God's own sake. She said, "If thou wilt give thine handmaid a man-child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life." Dear friend, her ambition for her son was that he would be a servant of God. Is not this the ambition that every parent should have for every child? Do we receive our children and train them so that that will be the case with them? Hannah kept her promise, and the noble life of Samuel is a reflection of the kind of parents that he had. Now, while we're not required to give our children to God in the same fashion as was Hannah's promise, we are to rear our children to the glory of God, and that cannot be done short of exercising parental responsibility and power. Samuel was a tower of righteousness in his life. He was a godly man and a leader of Israel for many, many years. The name of Samuel is revered as one of God's most devoted messengers. But what a tribute to Hannah. The home is where the child is trained. From the home come our business leaders, the political people, teachers, labor leaders, religious leaders. The stream will rise no higher than the spring and its source. There's always that great need for homes where God and truth and honor, respect and love and work and discipline are very much in evidence. Restraints on ill behavior that is just spasmodic and irregular, sometimes brutal and intemperate, will produce more of a savage than a respectable human being. Parents ought never abandon their children to the vice of the immoralities of society. The drug problems and the juvenile delinquency so rampant among the youth today is directly attributable to the parental failure in many instances. Parents have not cultivated in their young the noble aspirations, but urge them on to worldly success and personal satisfaction. And such only leads to ruined lives and hopeless graves. People without training that God directs are frustrated, they are confused, Oh, they're searching for something, but they find no meaning to their existence. They do not know how to cope with life, let alone the value of the soul. Oh, it's quite possible that the sternness of the Puritan home was a bit much. But when compared to the results with what is so much in evidence today, we're inclined to think that if they erred, they did so on the safest side. There must be a cultivation and development in the young heart for morality, for responsibility, personal responsibility, for the truth and for honesty. One of the bitter failures of our present day is the basic, fundamental honesty. Until one is taught to love God, he'll find no reason to live honestly and to live right. Probably he will seek out whatever means at his disposal to just do whatever he wishes. Oh, we spend so much time and money and energy on what we call educating our children regarding the affairs of life, secular matters, worldly matters, and neglect that which far supersedes all these things in importance. Children need to learn to make their own decisions, but it's up to parents to provide for them the will of God so that they can learn to make intelligent and righteous decisions. Parents have the duty to lead and to mold and to form that child so that he can stand on his own feet before God and be acceptable. And parents who do not give their all to this task, they are failures, regardless of whatever else they might accomplish in life. Parents must rear their children so that when the child walks in the ways of his training, he'll be walking on the road to heaven with God. Anything less is too little. Some years ago, there was a judge named Sam Davis Tatum. He was juvenile judge for many years, and he listed what he considered the 6 basic causes of teenage delinquency. 1, lack of religious training in the home. 2, petted and pampered children, too much freedom too early. 3, broken homes, one-parent families, and all the attendant insecurity. 4, the consuming of intoxicants, often in imitation of parents as well as of peers, children drinking at younger and younger ages. The easy access to alcohol and to drugs leads only to sorrow. 5, he said, a discordant home, where there's nagging and fussing and strife and immorality and profanity and such like. And he also listed as 6, dictatorial and overly rigid parents who consider themselves as dictators rather than parents, just really laying down the law, but seldom showing how life is to be lived. Oh, parents have a lot to consider. God help us to do our job well. But we must focus upon the teaching of the Bible about parental authority, parental government in the home, the proper exercise thereof, our welfare, the welfare of the nation, the welfare of our blessed children are dependent upon it. This has been The Burning Fire, and your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.